My name is Amy Spain Duncan, and I am an alcoholic. Hi, guys. So, hi, this is freaking awesome. Wow. So, okay, my sobriety date is March 6th of 2010. I have a home group called Lambton. We meet at 10:30 in the morning on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays at the Ice House in Louisville, Kentucky. If you're ever in the area, please come by. We are all inclusive and never exclusive, and we talk about God. I am sponsored by a woman who is sponsored by a woman, and I believe in good sponsorship. And I'm so excited, and I have to tell you that over here are my people. Those are Louisville's in the house. And in that group of women back there are my sponsor and my grand sponsor and my sponsee sister and women I sponsor and women they sponsor and my best friend. And I am blessed that God saw fit for a wretch like me to be surrounded by such beautiful, amazing, powerful, inspiring women. And I am humbled and grateful every day. So steps one and two, you know, I was told early on that step one was, you know, because it was the only one I had to do 100% and had to do it every day. And so that was very important to me. And early in recovery, and, you know, the old timers used to tell people, they tell the men, buy a black suit because you're going to go to a lot of funerals. And Louisville is a recovery city. It's a recovery mecca. We have tons of centers and halfway houses and detoxes and really strong Alcoholics Anonymous within our city. And so we are a firing line. And we go to a lot of funerals. And we're always devastated and we're always sad. And people go, what happened? Why'd they drink? They were doing so good. I just saw them last Tuesday. And when I'm asked that, I say, page 30. Because for me, page 30 is the only answer we have to why we will pursue this illusion to the gates of insanity or death. You women look so pretty and nice, and I'm just thinking, because this is what my mind tells me, they probably spilt wine on the carpet and were late picking up their children from piano recital. This is what my mind tells me about you all. And my story is I was not smart enough to stop drinking when drinking became a problem. There's a line in the book, alcohol drugged me. I was badly mangled. I had to be beaten into a state of reasonableness. And I am a low-bottom drunk. I'm a street drunk. I am a prostitute. I am a liar, and I'm a thief. Once I put a drink in me, I have misused my sex instinct since I was 13. I love that one. It's one of my favorites. I still, you know, my Alice always tells me, "Let the hoe die." I think it's so hard. They're all so cute, you know. But I do work on it. I will tell you that I am happily married, and I will, you know, probably, you know, Google, you know, gawk at a fireman every now and then. But I'm faithful. I am a faithful wife today. So those are better things. I have this amazing, beautiful life today. And I was born into an amazing and beautiful life. And alcohol interrupted all of those things and all the plans that my mother had for me and my family had for me. Alcohol just came, and I didn't know what I was suffering from. You know, I love the doctor's opinion. I love the diagnoses. You know, I heard a speaker in Nashville say, I always knew something was wrong with me because all my life people said, something is wrong with you. And I could relate. I was like, yeah, me too, you know? And so when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and they said, we think we know what's wrong with you. And what a relief. What a relief. So my dad is an alcoholic, and I can say that he's 30 years sober through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yep. He's actually at home. Denise was telling you my dad's was a plumber all his life, and you know, and he did IV, you know, drugs, and he drank, and he did all these things, and his body is showing all the signs and repercussions of that. It has, the body just wasn't as forgiving, you know, for the things he put it through, and he's got a bad back, and we've been through surgeries, and he loves Alcoholics Anonymous. God, he loves you all. And for him not to be able to get to meetings like he wants to, or go to conferences with me, Lee's been with us, and we go everywhere. And what a gift Alcoholics Anonymous has given us, because my dad didn't get sober until I was 18. And by the time I was 18, I was already in my disease, and I was just like, well, that's nice that the old man has somewhere to drink coffee with other old men and whatever they do. But through this shared disease and this shared solution, my dad and I have a phenomenal and amazing relationship today. And we talk about things that other parents, other dads and daughters don't. You know, we speak the language of love. We speak this language and the language of spirituality and God and miracles and joy and gratitude and humility. And it's just a beautiful thing. And he left when I was 7 years old. My mother divorced him because she didn't want to be married to an alcoholic, and the writing was all on the wall. My mother was raised in an alcoholic home. She knew what that looked like, and she wanted better for herself and me and my younger sister. My mother is amazing. She's just phenomenal, and she did everything you could do to get between her daughter and that oncoming train. You know, and I rebelled and I was defiant. I was that bad kid, you know. Everyone talked about my potential God, we hate that word. Like, please just stop expecting things from me. You know, guys would come up in bars and be like, can I buy you a drink? And I'd be like, you know, you can, but I just want, you know, this on the table. You'll be mad. I don't know when, maybe not tonight, but sooner or later, you're going to be mad. And I felt that way from early on. You know, I'm going to disappoint you. I'm going to make you angry, because I'm going to do me, and I'm going to do what I want, and that usually involved drinking. And when I drink, I have that personality change that occurs in 1 out of 10 drinkers, us, the alcoholic, and that happens for me, and I black out, and I act inappropriately, and then as a teenager, I was that girl that had the reputation, you know, and you act like it doesn't bother you, but no young girl wants that reputation, really. And so I started to put up my dukes, you know, and I kept my dukes up until I got here with you. Actually, until I was about 5 years sober. We were talking, my dukes stayed up, man. I didn't know what was going to happen next, and I don't like to feel bad feelings. And I don't like to be responsible for your feelings or I don't, what it is. I don't want to be accountable for how I make you feel. I don't want to be accountable for how my behaviors affect you. So I have to keep you at a distance, and I got to keep my dukes up all the time, you know. And I started doing that at 12, 13, 14 years old, and I just got better at it, you know. I'm a rageful drunk. I fight. I like to fight, and I'll bust the windows out of your house. I'll start a fire in your living room. I'm that girl. I really am. I always tell people, you know, some men run and like, she's crazy, go. And other men are like, baby, I finally found you, you know. And thank God for those men, or I'd always been single. And because I'm that girl, you know, I'm nuts. I like chaos. And when it's real loud and crazy out here, it quiets the real loud and crazy in here. So I need it because it gets too loud in here. And so I need it to be real loud out here, you know, and I need to blame them those and days, and it's your fault, and it's their fault, it's the teacher's fault, it's the coach's fault, it's my mother's fault, it's that boy's fault, it's that girl's fault, it's the job's fault, and I could never connect the dots between my drinking and my troubles. And even if I thought alcohol, you know, this is what we do. So say it's Friday, you know, morning, and you had a big party on Thursday, because why wait till Friday? And so anyway, the house is a mess, and there's beer cans, and strangers passed out, and you got a big black bag, and you're dumping the ashtrays and picking up the beer bottles, and there's a window busted out, and the cops had come last night, and somebody's sporting a black eye. Never did we say, maybe drinking is get out of hand. That party got a little crazy. No. We'd be like, next time, we're not inviting Jimmy. Did you see what he did? You know, never, not the booze. You're not taking the booze. And the book talks about that. You know, I'm going to, all the ways we try to drink successfully and drink without consequences. And that's my story. My story is page 30. And I just made it. You know, in the nick of time. So I'm drinking in high school. I'm sleeping with everybody. Girls get mad. Oh, so sensitive. I used to say, sweetheart, I do not want to keep him. I promise you can have him back. You know, I'm just trying to put something in me to feel better about me, you know, because that's that sex instinct out of control. You know, that hypersexuality, those risky behaviors, the drinking, all of those things, and the violence, and I wasn't raised that way. I didn't see those things, you know. My mom sent me to private schools, and that was like torture for an alcoholic. You know, we feel bad enough, but to like be surrounded by nuns, you know, like, yeah, oh, it was terrible. Terrible. And then I went to an all-girl parochial school. And just like I think that about you lovely ladies, that you bake cookies and that you're really sweet and you drive nice cars. And this is, you know, I thought all those girls, they didn't smoke cigarettes and they didn't sleep with boys and they didn't drink. You know, they didn't do the things that I had already begun doing and did. And so I began to lie to you about what I did and who I was. But that always comes out. I changed high schools 4 times. We never moved. My dad's not in the military. None of those things. I changed high schools because I cannot get along with you. And when I can't get along with you, I leave. Because I don't know how to be accountable. And I don't know how to be responsible. And I certainly don't know anything about amends. And really, at this point, I'm not even sorry. You know, it's your fault. So that was my attitude. At 19, I had my first daughter. She was born to an alcoholic mother who was suffering from the bedevilments. Page 52. That little girl's mother, me, had no control over her emotional nature. She was of little to no use to anyone. And this poor little beautiful girl, she carried around a Pooh Bear, and because she needed security and she needed safety, and I couldn't provide that. And she still has it. And Pooh's bald on the top where she like ate his hair. She's a nervous kid. And I couldn't control my emotional nature. And I told you about the men, and I told you about the drinking, and none of that stopped when that little girl was born. I couldn't put her needs above my own. I heard that we have a lady back home, Aileen, and Aileen came to a meeting I was at one time. I was about three months sober or something. She's got a real powerful message and this crazy voice, and she just gives it to you raw and uncut. Clazy talks about the Teflon that covers an alcoholic and how you can't pierce through it to get to us. And I told you I'd come off the streets, and Aileen could pierce that Teflon, and I could hear that message. And she told me from that podium that alcoholism will take motherhood from you. And I knew that's what had happened. I knew that's what had happened. Because by then I had 4 children. And I hadn't seen those kids. And by the time that little girl, Sarah, was 16 years old, her job, when the news said, white woman found, was to begin calling morgues and hospitals to see if it was their mom. Because I was MIA, I couldn't be near them, I couldn't look at them, I couldn't stand the way they looked at me. And alcoholism is progressive, and it is fatal. So at 19, I was a piss poor mom, but I was there, and I'd have fought you if you tried to tell me I wasn't, because I was delusional about who I was and how I behaved and what that meant as a parent. I started dating a guy that was a bouncer at a bar. I told you I like to fight. He was a bouncer and an ex-Marine. Ah, we'd go toe-to-toe. Because I'm nuts. And that little girl would be there. And, you know, he hospitalized me a few times, and he wrecked cars when I was in home, and he would come after me if I ran off. It was just real chaotic and crazy, and some of those relationships that we as women get ourselves into. But I don't want you to think I was an abused woman. I always, you know, through inventory, I can honestly tell you that probably he was defending himself. Because behind enough tequila, I will climb you like a spider monkey, and I'm carrying a knife. So I don't know. I was not a victim of that. I got pregnant with his daughter, and he did not want a kid, and he took off, and so I married his little brother. That'll make them mad. You know, and I'm not the only one. And you don't have to raise your hand. But you've dated brothers. I know you have. And I did. But here's what I did. I convinced this kid, you know, he's a couple years younger than me, to marry me. He didn't like his brother either, so it was, you know, it was easy to convince him that's what we should do. And so my daughter Allie has an Uncle Daddy. Yep. Mm-hmm. He and I had two children together. She has a sister cousin and a cousin brother. And that's not just because we're from Kentucky. That happened. My life is so ridiculous. I do want to point out, and I think it's important to note, he wasn't my brother. You know, like it was his brother. So, I didn't feel bad about it. I was on I think there's a woman out here that's clutching her pearls, like literally, like, but here's the kick. We were married for 10 years. I mean, I was married to this man for 10 years, and he's my children's father, and he's a wonderful father, and I just got real lucky. You know, I just got real lucky that he was a good and decent man, and that he loved me, and he loved our kids, and he has always provided for them. He has always been present in their lives, and I can't say that I have. You know, he's done that, and when I was gone, he remained, and he made sure that they were loved, and that they were cared for, and that they were fed. And he did that. And so I got nothing bad to say about him. I was on a fifth step in 2010 doing resentments, and my mother-in-law, you know, obviously ruined my marriage, and so we were going over that resentment, and my sponsor at the time was like, you don't see your part. And I was like, I gave her beautiful children by like all her sons. I believe that. I believe that to be the case. Like that she should have really been maybe extra nice to me. God love my first sponsor. She looked at the paper and she just looked at me real hard and she just kind of pushed it back and she's like, really? And it was like in that moment, I was like, oh, I'm terrible. And she's like, there, you set the ball in motion. We can agree on that. And anyway, so he and I were married. We have these two kids, and I'm drinking, and I'm drinking, and I'm drinking, and I'm drinking, and I drink, 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 and I drink. I get mad if you say anything about my drinking, because I'm going to protect the drink. We're going to fight if you come after the drink. The drink is still my solution. See, how I saw a sign in a clubhouse one time that said, I knew I was an alcoholic because of how I felt sober. See, when I drink, I feel like I think they feel. But sober, man, I'm coming apart and the noise is too great and I can't stand you and I don't like you. See, I got in the doctor's opinion. It says alcoholics, you know, drink essentially for the effect produced at once. And that's why I drank. I knew that. In fact, I didn't realize that 90% of the people didn't. I was like, well, of course we drink for the effect. And they were like, yeah, Amy, there's like a whole population that doesn't. And I'm like, really? That's weird. I never saw that. And so a year into this marriage, because when I drink, I'm nobody's wife. I'm an adulteress, you know, and I'm a liar, and I'm violent, and I'm manipulative, and I am all those things. In my cup, I am an unlovely creature. And a year into that marriage, he said, I'm taking these kids, and I'm leaving you. You know, you're crazier than even I thought, and I can't do it. And that's frothy emotional appeal. I was 25 years old. I knew something was wrong. I knew something was wrong. I knew that I was going to lose everything, the house, the kids, the husband, the two cars, the creek in the back. And see, all those things were the things that were supposed to make me okay. Since I was 12 years old, I'll be okay when he loves me, when I have those kids, when I'm out on my own, when I got my own place, when I got a career and a job. When all those things happen, then I'll be okay and the noise will stop and I'll be able to breathe. And I had all those things, and the noise didn't stop, and I still couldn't breathe. And that's a terrifying spot to be in, right? That realization, that first realization, that you can no more say, well, I'm going to be fine once this, once. See, all that had happened, and I still wasn't okay. And so I called my dad. He had been sober a few years. He took me to my first meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous. I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. You smell good. You have coffee. I love coffee. You had donuts. People weren't mad at me since I was 7 years old. They've been mad at me. They've been disappointed. Disappointed. We're so disappointed. God, that's heartbreaking, right? They'd been disappointed. Everybody out there that I knew from second grade on had been disappointed in me, angry with me, frustrated with me, you know, on and on. And I came to you and you weren't. You weren't. You said me too. And I said, but we know, sweetheart, we know. Sit down. Yeah. I'm like, okay. And so I loved Alcoholics Anonymous. I felt at home. I felt the love. I felt the magic from the very beginning. And I rode that feeling for 3 years. I had fellowship sobriety. I was sober on the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never cracked the spine on a big book, and I read the steps off the wall. That's why I call you Service Unit and Recovery. I am so in the first 164 pages of this text. It is my life. It is a design for living and one I try to apply effectively every day. I am sponsored. You can Pat, console her later. She's in the back. I sponsor. You know, I take service commitments. I am active in my home group. I take the action that is suggested in this book. I have worked the steps, and every time I take a woman through the steps, I work those steps again with my sponsor. I stay in 10, 11, and 12, continue, practice, and improve. I have those women that come to my house once a week, and we eat, mostly we eat. But at some point, we open this text. And we share and we talk and we stay grounded and we stay connected to one another and we check in with each other. And who's taking the meeting to, you know, Pee Wee on Mondays? That's Rachel. And on Tuesdays, Candace is going to do that. And Aaron's going to get a meeting into Bullock County Jail. And these women do things, man, and that's who I need to be with all the time to maintain this level of sobriety that I need. Now, I left, right? I went on the marijuana. I had four kids. Things got a lot better at home. Two more kids. And I sober. I take the kids to vacation Bible school. I lead vacation Bible school. I'm a soccer mom. I coach soccer. I read the book. I coach the soccer. I was a Girl Scout leader. I was a Boy Scout leader. Like, sober, they are important. And not because I tell you they're important, because my actions say they are important. And there were meals cooked, and there were prayers said, and there were baths given, and there was comfort and love and laughter in my home when I'm with you. That's the kind of mother I want to be. That's the kind of mother I am. But alcohol. So what I decided was, because I hadn't worked any steps and I hadn't read the book, and I wasn't about to jump into AA harder and salvage my sobriety, what I'm going to do in my brilliant mind is smoke weed, because God made weed. And I like God. So the plan was that I would smoke weed. Well, first I was going to buy a guitar, and there was going to be a campfire. There was going to be some tie-dye going on in the yard, maybe some chickens, right? And me and the kids, we were going to be hippies, you know, and I was going to be rocketed into the fourth dimension. The problem was I couldn't tell my sponsor because she's very close-minded. And she might suggest that wasn't the best plan. But I had made up my mind, right, that I was going to do this. And as long as I maintained a spiritual condition, which weed would help, I'd be fine. That is just not the case. I did. Alcoholism is patient. It's patient. It'll lull you into a sense of power and control, and it's just real patient. But then it does what it's supposed to do. Yeah. So I smoked weed, and then I got thirsty, and then I was like, oh, surely one Budweiser, if I only drink it at home, if I don't go out on Fridays, if I never drink hard liquor, you know, if I take a trip or I don't take a trip, sound familiar? And so I start doing that, and alcoholism returns in full force, stronger than it ever was, and it rears its head, and once again, but alcohol. And now we're fighting at home, and I have to go out all the time, and my blessings quickly became my burdens. Please don't ever let your blessings become your burdens. Those beautiful children that I adored, I had them too much. My mom needed to take them. I was tired of doing laundry, and I was tired of going to doctor's appointment, and it was about time he did something. My whole thinking, selfishness, self-centered, self-seeking, dishonest, inconsiderate. That was my thinking all the time. They're taking advantage of me. I did and expect and deserve. Oh, my God, the expect and deserve. Says complete opposite of humble and grateful. I just rode on expect and deserve, and nobody was giving me what I should have, and everybody was a failure but me. And eventually, we had a divorce. It took me 10 years to get back to you. In the divorce, I took half the marijuana that he was growing. Because I'm not stupid. No. And all of a sudden, that soccer mom that was on vacation, and we lived on 2 acres out in the country. Remember her? Now I'm a baller. Yeah, I just switched it up a little. And we can do that, right? Alcoholics can do that. So now I'm packing guns, and I'm, you know, I'm dealing with bikers and people I have no business dealing with, you know, and I am tough, and I, you know, I always like to fight, so I hadn't fought in, you know, several years except the husband. But if you're a fighter, you know, that's, yeah, come at me. Let's try it, you know. And that's the way I was, and the violence came back, and the anger came back. And what I was carrying in me that I was trying to ignore, because, see, I had to put my dukes back up. And I couldn't tell you about those four kids. I wasn't seeing anymore. I couldn't tell you about that. I couldn't shape their names in my mouth. because I was shamed and I was angry, and I'd walked away on the only thing that had ever been important. The annihilation of all things worthwhile had happened in my life. I hated me, and I couldn't stand you, and I became what the book calls as dangerously antisocial. I ended up in sordid places. I could no longer work. I couldn't have, well, I worked, I was self-employed. I don't know if the, you know, I'm sure none of you were prostitutes, but listen, if you're just getting sober and you're trying to like build a resume and you're like, oh my God, because that's like, you know, I'm like, I don't know, that's what I'm gonna say. Self-employed. Yes, honey. Many years I was self-employed. And that's what I did, and I hated every one of them. I hated every one of them. I hated that they had something that I had to have. And see, when the disease says, do it, little girl. I'm talking about the grips of alcoholism. I'm talking about it's got you and you don't have it. And it is pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I was homicidal and I was suicidal. I jumped in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous from 2007 until I got a sobriety date in 2010. And I want to say thank you. Thank you for never saying, hey, Amy, why don't you find a different meeting? Hey, Amy, are you done yet? God, I wanted to be done. I couldn't. See, at 25, I was able to come to the fellowship and I hung out with you and I quit drinking. At 37, I shook if I didn't have a drink by 2 o'clock. At 38, you would say, go to meetings and don't drink between the meetings. And that was freaking impossible. I couldn't do that. I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know where you went at 9:05 after the Our Father when you disappeared into the mist and I was standing there alone. And I didn't know how to make it to the next morning, to the next meeting. And I shook and I was scared and I would just crawl back out to the bottle and I would crawl back in. And you welcomed me every time. And you said, keep coming back. And you never said, you stink, Amy. I think one or two people said, you don't have to cuss so much. It's the only way. My vocabulary had become quite limited. I was expressing my emotions. And I did that for 3 years. I did that for 3 years. And I don't know what was different on March 6, 2010. I don't know. I don't know what was different. But on March 6, 2010, my dad drove me to a women's homeless shelter. And this homeless shelter had a treatment program. And in there were these women. And we did the deal. We did the deal. I lived there a year. It was not an easy program. We hold each other accountable. There's a community. I'm 39 with my dukes off and some 22-year-old. Like, I have a concern on Amy. Yeah. She was intimidating me in the kitchen. I'm like, sister, you got no idea. They would give us things to do. Like, we had to do words. You had to write. They would give you titles. You had to write 400 words on this and 500 words on that and all this stuff to do. And then they would give you consequences, like you're on no mail or you're on no makeup or whatever. It's behavioral modification. You know, and they fortify it with Alcoholics Anonymous because we had a big book studies. And beautiful women like my sponsor would teach classes on trying to help me and my befogged and stunted and drunken brain understand words that Bill wrote. And I did that, and I completed that, and it was hard. But I do want to tell you, one and two, was pretty easy. It was pretty evident that things were unmanageable. Not in fourth grade on career day did I say, well, I'm hoping if I play my cards right, I can be a street prostitute by the time I'm 38, but, you know, still waiting to see how that goes. So things had gone bad wrong, you know, unmanageability and powerlessness. And I knew the powerlessness because I couldn't get between the meetings without a drink. And I knew I was powerless over alcohol. I knew I was calling all the shots every day. And then coming to believe, and I want to say this, I believed you believed. And that's the best I could do. And if you're in this room and you don't know what you believe, believe that I believe. Believe that these women believe. And believing that you believed was enough for me to give it a shot. I went after my sobriety the same way I went after drugs and alcohol on the street. I went foot to pavement and don't get in my way. I wasn't joking. See, I came in with all that street and all that bad attitude. You gave me some knowledge in the 12 steps and I started beating people up with it. Because that's who I am. And I got a few sponsees in the back that remember that glorious time when they would say, stay away from Amy, she'll 12 stomp you. I had this really important information. It was really important that you accept it. And because I had this gift of desperation. But I still, you know, I was still smelt the street. I still, my mouth, you know, I was just still who I was, you know. But coming to believe was watching miracles happen in your life. And I would sit in that circle with women. And I remember sitting in the courtyard one day with Chastity, and she thought her son was going to be put up for adoption. And she and I prayed, and she went to court, and she came back, and she said, they're going to give me a chance. And it was the first miracle I'd witnessed in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I watched Maddie walk on water. And if you stick around long enough, you will come to believe, because you will see things that are otherwise unexplainable. They're just otherwise unexplainable. I'm talking about impossible things made possible. It's impossible that when I got here, this 110-pound, angry, dukes-up street whore would stand before you today with a bachelor's degree in nursing. I own my own home. I'm married. Somebody married me, right? How about that? He likes crazy women, though. Those beautiful children have allowed me, each one in their own time and with their own process of healing into their lives. And when something's wrong, they call me. And they say, Mom, you're the first one I called. Mom, I don't know what to do. And Mom, what about them? Mom, can I have some money? They do that. And I'm happy to do it. And I'm happy to be there for them and to have these healed relationships. And that mother that watched me start dying at 12. You know, she's got brain cancer. And when she gets sick and things go wrong, she said, I just feel better when you're here. And I get to go there and I get to be there with her and I get to say, Mama, I love you and it's not your fault and you did your best and I hope I make you proud. And I get to do all that because you taught me how to be a lady and you taught me how to be a mom and you taught me how to go to school and to go to work and how to be a friend. And, you know, I owe everything I know and everything I am, I owe to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and strong, sober women with you, like you. And if you didn't like my talk, don't worry. I got to tell you something about Teresa. When I was getting sober, she's your next speaker. When I was getting sober, because my mouth was so bad, but I loved to laugh, right? Rule 62. And nothing was funny on the streets. You didn't laugh. There wasn't nothing funny out there. There wasn't nothing, not a GD thing. And so when I got sober, I would listen to Teresa's CD, and she would laugh, and her laugh was so infectious. Like, I would laugh, and I'd be like, I'm laughing. I'm laughing with her, and I understand her, and I feel her. She was about 9 years sober when the tape I was listening to it. So when I first got the opportunity to meet Teresa, I was like, thank you for your service. Thank you for leaving your home on weekends to come to places like this to do this. So when a drunk like me walks in and somebody hands me a CD, I can listen to it. And I can learn to laugh. And I can learn that the most broken of us can be put back together. I love you all.
Thank you, Amy. And we'll circle.